suddenly I went to Facebook and see that they have started to bomb a lot of Ukrainian cities, and then I heard the bomb explosion, and I woke up my husband, my daughter, and say, you have 5 minutes to knock yourself out the beds and escape from Kiev. So we only took medicines, documents, cats and dog, and then we go to Lviv.
And how are your children doing? I know last time we talked, you talked about how difficult it was to tell them to leave, right?
Yeah, but we have made a decision. Unfortunately, they will leave for me, but I decided this is better. You never know. And having children on our backs, it's even more difficult. So unfortunately, they will leave tomorrow. This is one more thing which making my mood very down today. Also to the Bucha photos and to Irpin photos, also the children are leaving. But I cross my fingers that they will be able to get back soon.
And how are they doing? I mean, are they, it's emotional for them too, I bet.
It's very emotional. They don't want to go. They want to stay. I'm looking at tomorrow a little bit being scared.
Mass and shelling and lots of sort of explosions around. The close is like 10 meters covering me with like sand and dirt and whatever. Almost knocked me down. And it was like nonstop. That was happening. You know, it was clearly very intense. It was clearly very important for both sides. It was clear that this was a, you know, it was a place where we wouldn't move and they wouldn't give up. We are now getting warnings that there might be chemical weapon usage, nuclear weapon usage. And, you know, when you come to the front line, I had several nights where I couldn't sleep and I was just sitting there in, like laying in the bed, like in my military, whatever this place where we all are. And I was just asking myself, okay, am I going to die? Am I ready to die? Do I want to die? No, I don't want to. But if I came here, I'm ready to die. If I will die, I will die. No, if I have to, I will. I mean, what can I do? I mean, bombs and whatever, the mines exploding next to me, I cannot control God's decision. If they send that shit, if they do what they do, okay, if they do it in a place where I am 5-10 kilometers around me, everyone will be dead. Is that the way to celebrate May 9th? Maybe that's what they will choose to do. I have no control, unfortunately. But what I think that will, the effect it will have, that hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians will take more weapons and will fight even harder. And, you know, for that, they have to burn the entire country.
They're holding the nuclear power plant for many months now. But apparently they can try to launch a false flag attack on the nuclear power plant. The good thing is that the walls of the nuclear power plant are pretty thick, so they should withhold a pretty big missile attack. That's what we hope for. But it still feels very unsafe, truth be told. It still feels very dangerous. We have learned to read the maps of the winds to understand where the wind would blow in case something's happened over there on the south, which is a scary thing to be living with. It's like checking on the winds around that area to understand who will be most threatened. But we hope that they wouldn't act upon it, that they would just keep on use it as basically a hostage, well, if you can say it this way. But yeah, this is one of the most difficult situation right now, is over the nuclear power plant.
It was more scary last few months. Now it becomes more scary from from the understanding that you don't really know how long it will take and whether really we can manage this thing. I mean, we can got a victory here. So and this absence of knowledge making me mad, honestly, because you don't know. You probably know what will happen tomorrow, but you are not really sure what will happen in 3 or 6 months, and this is killing.
Well, we actually had parliamentary sessions for 2 days now, today and yesterday, which was emotionally difficult to come on this day to the parliament. We all remember how we came there exactly 1 year ago at 7 in the morning. This number, 8,000, that they do have confirmed is of course so much lower than the real numbers, because we don't know how many people died in Mariupol, because we don't have access to the city. But the number there itself can be 20,000-30,000. That is the numbers that we can guess about. Then add to that tragedy is thousands of Ukrainian children who have been abducted from Mariupol and other cities in the Donetsk region, particularly from that area. So thousands of kids who have just been taken away from their families, from their loved ones, and just taken to Russia. That is a terrible, terrible crime that people should be held responsible for. Do you know, I don't think the international community knows a lot about those abducted children, but I, as a mother, of course, do feel so much for those kids. I think there was this rethinking, a new understanding of this reality, then we are in this I don't want to say long term, but at least midterm. And midterm, you have to take care of the basic needs of your family and your society overall. So I think people are trying to run businesses as much as possible, but it doesn't help, because I mean it doesn't help that much, because you have to realize that for economics overall, the loss of Azovstal, I mean, everybody were following this from the military standpoint, but it was a huge enterprise that was producing quite lots of a big portion of our exports to Europe. We were selling steel, and that was big, very big, very significant part of our income. I wouldn't be able to say the exact number, but that is like agriculture and steel. Those were the two things that we were selling mainly. So now suddenly we lost two big plants that were producing steel. We cannot sell steel anymore, and agriculture is you know, unclear right now. So the, again, small and medium enterprises are running, that's good, but in terms of the overall well-being of the society, like the loss of those two major industries is something we shall be feeling in a longer term perspective.
And now, the Dave Kinchin Show.
Some voices there from the front lines and folks who are directly impacted and involved with the war in Ukraine now at year two officially as of this date, February 24th. Thank you for joining us, everybody. I'm Dave Kinchin, and we're checking in once again with Jose, that's his military name, who was on the front lines really right from the beginning when the war began in Ukraine. And we are going to join him now, and he's going to give us some thoughts on where things are 2 years in and how he's doing. He has a colleague from the Ukrainian military with him as well. So let's get to that right now. Well, Jose, I know we've been talking for some time now, and it's always great to talk with you. It's hard to believe that we're at least here in the States, we're watching this, and that this is year two of this war, or going into the third year. This anniversary, February 24th. I know you've been there on the front lines, and I know there have been so many wars over the years that it doesn't feel like 2 years, or does it?
I more feel like it's one long day, like a nightmare. So,
and we're talking with also QB, who's a pilot also with the military.
She's a UAV pilot.
Can you kind of tell me about what you've been doing and kind of, I mean, I know that obviously security is important, so you don't have to say a whole lot. You know, I'll let you be the judge of that. But like what, just give me an idea of what things are like now on the ground on this second anniversary of this war.
Yeah, I'm UAV pilot and I'm researching our area, trying to find some vehicles, military vehicles, and help our artillery to damage or destroy it. So, and also we have FPV bombers that we use to destroy techniques and something like that.
Are you working, is it many night missions right now, or does it vary?
I'm sorry, can you repeat?
Are you working a lot of night missions, like evening missions, or does it really vary?
Sometimes, all time, it's, it could be day missions or night missions. We have both UAVs for all of that missions.
And what's been the mood today on this anniversary? What are people feeling? People fighting for freedom you have been all this time? What's the mood been today?
I think many people around me are tired, and sometimes it's really hard to fight when you don't have enough ammunition, because it's really hard to see all enemies around, all military equipments, and it's hard when you cannot destroy it,
I know President Zelensky has marked the second anniversary. He says, quote, his country, quote, will succeed. Of course, Ukraine had defied, as CNN reports here, many predictions to fight off Russia. But there are certainly signs that it seems like the war has been turning some aspects in Russia's favor. How critical is the need right now for more equipment, from Western nations? Is that something that you're seeing right now still?
You know, it's very critical. It's super critical because now we don't have enough, and we don't have so much military equipments like Russian, and fight with this enemy, it's really hard. And sometimes it's compensates that we have really brave people around.
I know that I'm reading that several foreign leaders have been arriving in Ukraine to show solidarity with the Ukrainian people on this anniversary. The NATO chief was there and said that, I think he said, I'm not sure if he was there, but he said that the situation remains extremely serious. Of course, we could see I know that there were some Russian strikes overnight. I'm just reading up on kind of everything that's been happening. I mean, what's kept you going? Obviously, fight for freedom, but I mean, tell me more about what's kept you going personally.
Personally, yeah, I think that I'm fighting for our future, future for my children's, and future for not mine but all, and. I think if we cannot stop Russians there, they will continue to do it, not in Ukraine, but in Europe, and after that in America. And I don't see any other options what I can do with that.
Kibi, tell me, who were you? You're working as a pilot now, but who were you before the war began? Like, what was life like for you? I mean, obviously not asking for like specific details that would identify you for security purposes, but just in general, your life, what was life like for you before all this began 2 years ago?
Oh, I think now that my life was really great. And I was a software engineer before, and I am working on different interesting projects with different teams from all the world. And yeah, so it's extremely not that I do No.
And when did you first get involved? Were you did you set up to fight like on day one, or when did you first get involved?
I think 6 months
Okay.
before I decided and go on mobilization, and but from the first day of this war, I all time think about that, and sometimes I decided that it's time, and I'm preparing enough so I can be involved like a UAV pilot, and because you know it's something interesting for me, and it's something that I where I can do something to stop
Is
them.
there more? Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's all.
Okay, sorry. There's a delay. I didn't mean to cut you off. That's the thing about Zoom. There's so many delays here. Is there anything more you could tell me about kind of your missions? Again, I know that, you know, without compromising security, other things you can talk like what is a typical mission? There probably is not a typical mission, but what's if there is, what is a typical mission like, or an average mission like for you?
Typical mission. Mostly, I think it's reconnaissance of our area, fighting vehicles, and it's more common. But the missions that I like more, it's when I can destroy it myself. We have some UAVs, like FPV, and when you see how. When you see some technique, some vehicles, and you can damage it to yourself, so I think it's most that I like.
And let me bring in Jose as well. Jose, talk about kind of, you know, how you two started working together, or at least kind of where you are right now, and what the second anniversary has meant for you right now.
Well, first, I will tell you how I managed to bring QB to this conversation because it's quite interesting. On May 2022, beginning of May, I was teaching pilots in one of the sort of in one of the parts of the front line, and the person that is a commander of QB now was there with his team. And he was outstanding in terms of his resourcefulness and ability to learn and the new things that he brought to this training. And since that time, we kept in touch all this time. Everything new that I see, touch, can get a hold of, I always give it to that person and to their unit. And some time ago, he told me that now we have a lady who joined us, who is a volunteer. She came on her own initiative. She's young, and this and that. And then I hear that QB became one of the best, most effective pilots. And the just for you to visualize, they don't work with the FPV with small things. They work with larger. Loitering munitions type of things with like airplane type, and they also do recognizance quite effectively and they experiment, they take new tech, new equipment, they so they are when they work with loitering munition, they're equipment hunters, so they look for expensive dangerous equipment on the other side, and they destroy it. Unfortunately, I cannot share the numerous videos, but
Sure.
they are quite impressive. And that team has been spotted and is well known. And I'm very proud that I know them and I support them and I work with them. So that's the QB side. So I'm very very happy that I. Because of you, I asked the commander, and he gave me the contact, and I also met QB.
And thank you for that. I'm very grateful.
Well, it's my pleasure. Today is an important day, as we discussed with you. It's a turning point. It's a historical moment, whether I'm sorry to say that American internal politics will kill the the hope, because there is no magic. You know, you cannot pave your way to the victory with the corpse of Ukrainian soldiers. We just don't have enough human beings to do that with Russia. And Russia does it exactly that way, because they just use that human waste. They take all the like a second or third rate citizens, and they send them to be killed on the front line. We cannot do it. And even if we do, you cannot do it without military equipment. And one way or another, we can bring here the Budapest Protocol. When Ukrainians gave up their nuclear weapon, we can talk about many things. But what Kuby said is, it is becoming more and more obvious that Ukraine just a test case. Taiwanese talking about that openly. Koreans are really tense, and if you think about that, how easy would that be to launch something in Korea for our Chinese colleagues? Now we have this Palestine story, Israeli Palestine. Clearly, it's staged. It is. I don't know who was on whose side, but it certainly didn't happen by itself. Provoking a military machine like Israel with the brutal killing, I don't think that happened by itself. It is not the style. It is not the usual way things are. And things will be happening more and more, and it's quite clear where it's going, it's not clear where it will end up. But if we allow this to develop, we will have a major collapse, a major war. And America is being tested without any question. Because you could be tested in Taiwan, you could be tested in Japan, you could be tested in Korea, you could be tested in many places. But it was selected that the first test is Ukraine, and if we fail this test, yeah, we are done here. But it's not that anybody has avoided anything. So I told you many times before. I will tell you again. Strategy to wait and see how things will develop and spoon feed Ukraine with the weapons was idiotic strategy. Whoever was designer of it, whoever was hoping for whatever they were hoping, it was certainly not in American or European interest to do that this way. Now, how do I feel? Well, again, way back in 2014, when we were finishing this revolution, people learned that you do your best and God will take care of the rest. And this was like a slogan that people lived with. And this is the only thing we can do now. People do whatever they can. They fight on the front line, they supply, they develop new equipment, they train people, they do whatever. They treat people in hospitals. And then we hope for the best. Frankly, I don't know. I can say I know nobody who is willing to surrender, but I have a biased audience. People that I deal with, they are usually on my side of the story. Yeah. But I don't feel that people are giving up. Not at all. At the same time, it is, you know, you have to be realistic. We are running out of cannon shells. We are running out of the anti-aircraft equipment. We will be running out of hand grenades, of the cartridges for you know, for machine guns. Like, I mean, at the end, as our Minister of Foreign Affairs put, we will fight with shovels, which, you know, is a funny way of putting it, but, you know, and again, you know, how far we can get with that, hard to say. But again, I haven't been fighting on the front line since a long time ago. People who have lived there, who stayed there, who fought there, you know, for 2 years, and this is what Kubi said, they are extremely tired. It is very exhausting for a relatively, not small, but not as big nation as Ukraine, to sustain that level of attack, of violence, of brutality, of bombardment, of rocket sort of flying and all of it. So we're not giving up. But we understand where it's going, and it's now all in the establishment of the United States. Without that, we know what will happen. And even with support of US, we now, Europeans are saying clearly that we are not prepared for big war. Now they are, after 2 years, they're trying to catch up. Good that they started to think about that, but I think the threat, the overall threat, it's quite significant. It's quite serious. I'm talking about, you know, like global players that will try to use that to their advantage.
Jose,
sorry, my microphone went off. You know, it's really hard to speculate on this because this is a hot topic, a very sensitive topic, very. You know, bloody full topic, and for a lot of people, I have Jewish friends since my, you know, early childhood. I have Arab friends since my time I lived in North America. You know, I am not I'm nobody to comment on what's right, what's wrong,
sure.
But what I am absolutely certain of is that the timing, the brutality, the coverage in media, the reaction of party to that was such that somebody who launched it, I have a feeling, orchestrated it. It was not made brutal accidentally at the beginning, and it was not accidentally covered in detail, in such a detail, by the media all over. And watching some of the African countries launching lawsuits, understanding that's not their usual style of dealing with things and everything. Like, you're watching it and you're really having a feeling that this is some you know, drama prepared for the audience. Very unfortunate. Unfortunate because people are suffering. Unfortunate because the entire country is being destroyed. Unfortunate because a beautiful country, Israel, is sort of in a very difficult spot, with, you know, and unfortunately because our American partners are in a tough spot, and this was meant to be this way, because if you think about that, how can America react to a brutal killing of Israelis by, you know, by Palestinians? How can Israel react to it? And it was very predictable. And now it's
It's a sort of, you know, everyone is in the corner, and finding a way out of it, it would take, I don't know what it would take. I can't even think of, I mean, it's not for me to think, but, and if you add this to the complexity of you.
Just so we're clear, no, it's okay. Just so our listeners are clear, when you talk about the lawsuits, you're talking about like South Africa's lawsuit to the UN, alleging that Israel's military, this is from actually Northeastern University, that Israel's military campaign in Gaza amounts to genocide of Palestinians and seeks the campaign's end. Is that about right? You're talking about their lawsuit to the UN. Got it. Okay.
No, I'm not saying it's unlawful lawsuit.
Right. Yeah, that's what you're referencing. I get you.
I'm just saying that you know, when somebody is showing completely unusual behavior, logical maybe, but well prepared and unusual. And if you take in the context, like in the context of everything else, it does look, to me, it looks very, it looks very well prepared. Let's put it this way. But again, not for me to judge, not for me to be in any way express opinions. All I'm saying is the increase of violence, the spread of the violence, and you know, we have seen the developments in other parts of the world, and you know, this entire sort of. It takes it to a new level, the confrontation, the tensions, we need to stop it. We need to stop that spiral of violence, of confrontation, of destroying, destabilizing, because we have already cornered the global economy. Clearly, but we and we have created a lot of problems for African countries, but if you push it a little bit further, it will be a snowballing effect, and there will be no safe and predictably stable place on Earth if that develops further. Not Europe, not US, not Asia, not Africa, not Latin America. I think it is very clear what is happening. You know, people are afraid of naming it. There is already some, you know, naming it even in the big American politics, finally. But the way to stop it is to just understand that this is more important than sort of party interests or election priorities. Again, we're not talking about climate. You know, I mean,
yeah, we're talking about war. We're talking about life and death here. Yeah.
Yeah, but no. But the consequences are also for ecological consequences. That is so far away from us Ukrainians, especially from QB being on the front line. I remember my February two years ago when I was dying of cold at the end of February, and then today when you know when we have rain all over. But I'm not saying 2 years it changed, but I'm saying that it's certainly not improving. And all the reports are showing. But we are busy. We're busy killing each other. We're busy trying to change the world order, trying to get the influence. Anyway, I certainly hope that American politics will find courage, maturity, you know, sense of responsibility to not to allow this problem to spread further. We need to stop it right there. Same thing for our Palestine and Israeli friends. I certainly hope they find wisdom and they find some balance and some you know, some way of stopping the spread of the of that problem.
You're fine. And when you say that, probably you're talking about, like, because I mean, one of the senses I've had with you know, just following this war in Ukraine is that, and I think you said it even today, you said it a few times, that, you know, if, you know, God forbid, if Ukraine falls, that there's so many other dominoes after, right? Is that kind of the sense that that's still the sense that's out there, right? Is that, I mean, this is, if people think that this isn't their problem in other countries, think again.
Today I was asked by somebody, and this was a simple question. Why do you think, if Chinese want to destabilize this world, why wouldn't they get Koreans attacking, North Koreans attacking South? And I didn't know what to say. You know, it is really a simple thing, and then United States will be completely drawn into the direct military exercise. Would it happen next? I don't know. I hope not.
Yeah.
But if the goal is to destabilize, all they can, I mean, look at Putin, what he does. He's not no different from any other dictator. He's always raising stakes. That's the only thing he can do, you know, raise stakes. Until the other party blinks, until the other party gives up, until the other party starts thinking about saving whatever they can save, or reducing their exposure. Why wouldn't they do what I said, if and when they need to raise the stake further? And I mean, if Ukraine falls, then talk to Taiwanese. listen to what they have to say. If Ukraine falls, you know, a lot of people will get very, very nervous.
Yeah.
And this can happen. But, you know, we don't have to, you know, use threats to threaten people to get them thinking and act responsibly. I think it's done naturally. And the only thing I can say is to the American people is to try to think responsibly, and write a letter, email, make a phone call to your constituencies, to people who represent you in power. There has to be certain things in life. They should be beyond the party considerations. Whether people like it or they dislike it, but it's a fact of life. America has been domineering power, and a lot of us hope that you guys will stay for the sake of saving democracy, saving some order. But not all of us, you know. Certainly for some people, it's very important to compromise the standing of the United States. And
with so much chaos,
they might succeed.
With so much chaos in our politics right now. I mean, we're in primary season, states are voting, and it's just, you know, I can only imagine, you know, I mean, people in this country on both sides politically are dismayed by what's happening in our politics. And I can only imagine, you know, what that means for folks on the front lines of major wars for democracy, like, you know, your fight, the Ukrainian fight for freedom, for democracy there. You know, you look at what's happening here in the States and you're thinking, well, if the U.S., can't get it together, then, you know, how do we, you know, who leads the way in this, right?
Well, you know, you always have to stop yourself thinking or expressing opinions about somebody else's politics. Mm-hmm. That's not, I am not an American voter. I'm not, I shouldn't express any views, and this is for American people to decide. But one thing is very clear, is whatever political agendas, whatever political hassle, struggle happens, politicians have to have responsibility to act responsibly beyond your simple party interests or immediate sort of objective of winning or you know the especially in the United States, because the stakes are so high and the influence is so profound, and so many people depend on that. That it is very important that certain things are done in a coordinated, responsible manner, and they are not you know, they're not done in a simple fight or struggle or a short-term sort of benefit gain objectives. You know, the life is more complicated than that. It is hard, and it's almost impossible for politicians to, you know, to act differently. But there are some of American politicians that were, you know, they made they left their memories of them in politics, because they had this ability to overstep and act responsibly, and I hope that United States would demonstrate this wisdom and sense of responsibility. Again, Americans as well. I'm sorry, Europeans as well, but they have different problems. They need to find some way of managing things slightly better, and they know it. But you can see it even in Europe. They are finding ways of managing some of the complicated members of the establishment in some countries. Again, now QB is IT professional. I also had some connection to that field. Now, guys, you have AI challenge, and see, that is a big thing. If level of manipulation will be significant, and it will use that technological sort of instrument, then, but again, that is something that competent institutions that you have, and you have them functional, should act. Obviously, as once I had an interesting experience interacting with one of those North American agencies, and that officer told me, when I gave him some information, I said, "Hey guys, you have to act." And he said, "Listen, we know that we are not allowed by politicians to act."
Yeah,
and that is said. Now that you guys are facing a very, very serious challenge, if there will be no efficient way of engaging resources you have, will be very, very difficult. And we had this the same. We had the same, because now looking backwards, like back at 2 years plus, like 3-4 years ago, QB and her colleagues are asking, why didn't we produce that? Why didn't we thought about this? Why didn't we invest money in the you know, quality UAV solutions or modern weapon and there are no clear answers. And this goes back to our politicians. So act responsibly. Don't wait. Things can get quite bad. If we don't unite, if we don't demand that that peace, order, and common sense being will be observed by our government. And again, we are critical of our government in Ukraine. We understand it's a war. We're not, but we register and we sort of we're not euphorical. The same thing should be in U.S. and in Europe.
Well, we're definitely continuing to pull for both of you and Ukraine. I mean, just I think any nation that, you know, democracies always stand together, you know, and we still see people flying the Ukrainian flags proudly here in the United States. And you know, hopefully our politics, you know, can settle down to a point where we can there's a return to tension or greater attention to international affairs. Because it does feel like it gets clouded with so much going on here. Kibi, was there anything else you wanted to add at all? Or Jose, anything else you wanted to add before we go? Because I know you both have to get back to Kibi. I know you have to get back to what you're doing on the battlefield.
Yeah, I want to say thank you for all American people. And I hope that you will struggle with us in this war. So thanks.
Absolutely. Thank you. And Jose, it's always great talking with you too. And thank you for the updates. And you know, I've been thinking about you a lot, you know, it's always great to check in with you you know, continued prayers for, you know, peace, victory, Ukrainian victory, and more.
Dave, pleasure talking to you. Thank you. And I don't want to, you know, this whole thing to sound, too tragic. We fight. People are sort of doing incredible job on the front line. We bring a lot of new equipment to the front line. We do everything that is in our power to keep going. I'm sure it will prevail. I believe that the United States will come through even stronger than before. And I'm sure that whatever difficult choice that you guys have now in the presidential elections will find its best solution. And I you know, it's always important to have a positive and constructive view, and I think it prevails in Ukraine. I think Ukrainian people are sort of not giving up, and I hope that the Americans also will find a way to reconcile, to move forward, and to keep that influential, important balancing role that you guys have had for years. Not always perfect. Right. Anything could be criticized, but
yeah, definitely not always perfect. Yeah,
nobody is perfect.
Yeah,
you have to do your best.
Yep.
Yep.
Absolutely. Well, Jose and Kibi, thank you both so much for taking the time, and I will continue to chat with you online, Jose.
Very well.
All right. Take care. Godspeed.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye bye.
Thanks.